Okay, so thanks for coming to How to Run an Event. Let me begin by saying that if you're here genuinely interested in how to run an event, you're making a terrible mistake. Please turn around, go the other direction.
Yeah.
Spare yourself. Kidding, of course. I had a lot of people tell me that. Half of them were kidding, half of them weren't. But I find it very fulfilling and I have no regrets. So, if you've seen a panel of mine in the past, I've started three panels this weekend with this same statement. If you've seen a panel of mine in the past, then you know that my usual MO is to fully plan, to prepare a presentation, a script, and an agenda, and then not have time to do any of that. And then just come here, sit in a chair in front of all of you, and wing it. I did that all last year. I did it all day yesterday and all this morning. And now I'm going to do it again. So far, it's worked out. No complaints. So this is how to run a convention slash event. I'm going to begin with my statement, which is always that I'm one person. And I started running Furrydelphia with almost no previous experience running furry conventions. I had managed people before. I had been to several furry conventions as an attendee, but I had never been, I had staffed like one or two things, but nothing major. I kind of leapt like right from the bottom to right to the top. If you've never managed people or done any kind of event stuff, I had 7 years experience running all kinds of events, from weddings to school events to block parties with thousands of people. So I had some background of how to do this. If you have no background whatsoever how to do this, do a lot of research and surround yourself with good people. The point I'm making is I'm one person, and I've made most of this up as I've gone. Given my experience, most of me making it up has worked out pretty well, which is why we're here. I've also seen people go and make it up along the way where it has worked out really, really, really terribly. Some very recent, in fact, and not too far away. Some of you might know what I'm talking about. If you do know what I'm talking about, then I will say that that guy, who I will not mention, came to me and asked me for my help. And after going through all his books and going through all his details, I was like, you are not prepared to run an event. You need to not sign this contract. You need not do this. And he said, thanks for the advice, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it did not turn out well at all. I've been to a lot of events like this, how to run things, how to get stuff off the ground. And usually I see, they ask questions, what do you guys want to know? And how can I answer those questions? I am going to do that, but first I'm going to tell you the stuff that I think you need to know right off the bat, that a lot of people often don't want to talk about. A lot of times we want to talk about, like, how do I pick a theme? How do I choose a hotel? Or if it's just a meet, how do I pick a good venue? But I find that before we get to all those fun conversations, the important thing to talk about first is how do I figure out how much money I have to spend, and how do I correctly book a hotel or venue in a way that doesn't expose me to financial liability? That's a big thing. But again, I'm just one person. I kind of stumbled my way through a lot of this, and I'm sure that if you ask other people who have been doing this a lot longer than I have, they'll have probably similar things to say, different things to say, I don't know. So take everything out of my mouth with a grain of salt. I'm not like a spokesperson for how to do this. I've done by no means a perfect job. Get advice from as many sources as you can. That's like the big thing. And I do not take my own word as gospel, and neither should you. Now that disclaimer is out in the air, how many people are genuinely interested in starting something any amount of anything of any amount of furries getting together. How many are thinking a full-blown convention? Okay. Do you, where at?
Maine.
Maine?
Yeah.
Okay, I believe there was a convention in Maine that folded a couple of years ago. Okay, cool. My typical MO when I do this panel is I don't really like to talk too much about other conventions because I hesitate to make it look like I'm bad-mouthing people or preferentially treating people. I have no opinions either way about Pine Fur Con. All I know is that they folded. I have no idea why. And I won't talk about why. Mm-hmm. But awesome. Cool. Glad you guys are here. And then how many people are thinking maybe just like a meet, like handful of people, maybe like 10 people to 50 people, just are we thinking bowling meets? I know a lot of people think bowling meets. That's very, very popular. What other kind of meet? What are you thinking? Because
you put your hand down. We meet at a restaurant or something like that. And in this case, in Salem, Mass., it was one with a whole bunch of video games called Bit Bar. So okay. People were able to do that as well. And plus, we walked around Salem a little bit.
Okay, yeah. I think there's a place called Barcade here in Philly that's
pretty easy. Yeah, I know exactly where Barcade is.
Yep.
Sounds good. Just, guys, give me one second. This is Frey, Director of Public Safety. Give me one second. He looks like he's got something to tell me real quick. I'll be right back in 1 minute.
I had seen something on Telegram about a possible main, I can't remember what it's called, but another convention starting.
Land.
Huh?
Furcation.
Oh, Furcation Land. There it is. Yeah.
From Vacation Land.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
PFC was good, but I think the money
didn't
make money or something.
There were issues.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we're trying to solve is a lot of transparency, a lot of planning and organization.
Yep. I mean, we've spent the past...
I don't know if you saw that.
Yep. We've spent the past year just in planning phases.
Mm.
I mean, we're taking this as slowly but as quickly as possible.
You should see the documentation.
We have a Google Drive of about 90 to almost 100 pages of documentation.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Unfortunately, people don't stop misbehaving just because I'm busy.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, so this keeps poking me, so this is coming on briefly. Okay, restaurant meet, great idea. There used to be, I think, diner meets in Jersey. I know that things like hibachi meets or hot pot meets are always fun. So yeah, restaurant meets are great. I know that people really love furballs and all different kinds of things. Even if it's just like, hey, I've got a pretty cool house with some pretty cool space. I'd love to get people over in my backyard for a barbecue. That's a furry meet. Why not? All the way up to a full-blown convention in a hotel like this. So, in terms of picking a venue, right off the bat, there's a lot of things that people are going to say, this is what's most important to me about a venue. The most important thing about a venue to a lot of people is that the venue has enough space to accommodate you, that if it's a hotel for a convention or even just a meet for people who are coming from a long way, that it has enough hotel rooms and that the hotel rooms are appropriately priced for fur meets. I will tell you right now that a first-year convention happening in a hotel where the room rates are $250 or more is never getting off the ground. Because no one's going to spend that much money to come out to your first convention. So a lot of people have a lot of criteria, like, is it big enough? Is it affordable for guests? Is it in a good location that people can get to? All kinds of stuff like that. But I'll tell you right now, hey, this is how to run a furry convention or an event. Feel free to come on in if you want. I will tell you right now that really the most important question about any venue is, hey, can I pay for this? And when I say I pay for this, I literally mean you, the individual. Because at the end of the day, once you've gone through all your negotiations, if it's a hotel, if it's a bowling alley, if it's whatever, at the end of the day, they're going to hand you a piece of paper with a price tag on it. And they're going to say, sign this. You're going to have to sign it. And when you sign that piece of paper, you're taking on all of the financial liability associated with it. Meats are usually all right. Meats, a bowling alley or a restaurant, if you're booking, a lot of restaurants will do like $500 guest minimums or whatever. So the worst case scenario is you sign guaranteeing a minimum, nobody shows, and now you're stuck with a $500 bill. All the way up to, you're on a whole convention, your attendance is dismal, and you are now stuck with paying for the entire event, plus all of the hotel rooms that people didn't book, which can be a six-figure number. In our case, for Furrydelphia's first year, the room rental, the food and beverage, and the hotel room block was a total financial liability of about $180,000, which I had to sign my name on. Fortunately, people came, they ate food, and they booked the hotel rooms, so it was all good. But touching briefly on big conventions, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but for any of you interested, people who are genuinely considering it, there's three really important things about running a convention, from what I have found, because I've talked to quite a few hotels in this area, and here's what all of them are concerned about. It is space rental. So this is a building that has rooms in it. We've got three ballrooms. We've got main events. We've got the video game rooms. And we've got the dealer's den. We've got a room for registration. We've got panel rooms. We've got staff back of house rooms that you guys don't even know about. We've got like six or seven of those. We've got the headless lounge, the public safety office, attendee services. It's extensive. And so the hotel doesn't just kind of let us show up here and party. We do have to pay them. So they want a certain amount of money in exchange for the use of the space. The second thing they're concerned about is called food and beverage, because any hotel that's big enough to host a furry convention like this has a banquet team. And those banquet people need work. So they're not going to be very happy with you if you try to run an event like this and you say, that's okay, we don't need any food. Because they now have to tell their chefs and their servers that you guys don't have work this weekend. They don't like that. So a lot of times, the room rental and food and beverage are split. There's a certain amount of room rental and a certain amount of food and beverage. I always come at my hotel and tell them that I want 100% food and beverage. The reason being is because, you know, I have two options. I could spend $20,000 on room rental and $20,000 of food, or I can spend nothing on rental and get $40,000 worth of food and spend the same amount of money and get twice the food. Everyone likes food. So I usually tell a hotel that it's called food and beverage minimum, and it whatever it is to make the space complimentary, in my opinion, that's the route you want to go. Because it's like, you're going to pay money, so do you want to pay? If you're going to pay 40 or 50K anyway, do you want, from your 50K, do you want $10,000 worth of food, or do you want $50,000 worth of food and space for free? Kind of a no-brainer. And the third thing they care about is hotel rooms. One of the biggest financial liabilities that no one even realizes is that the convention has to guarantee a certain number of rooms. When we make a room block, we say, in one of the rooms, if you tried to book a room at this convention this year and you had difficulty because our room block was full, it was because we didn't know how many people were going to come this year. So we guaranteed the hotel a very small number of rooms. Because if we promise the hotel 200 reservations and we only get 50 reservations, we have to make up the difference. And the rooms here are $140 a night. So if we were to have to pay for 150 room nights at that price, that's a lot of money. They're going to hit you with a pretty big bill. That actually happened to us the first year. It's called attrition. It sucks. We actually got hit with an extra $20,000 because we overpromised our rooms. We had a lot of locals who just said, oh, I live real close to the hotel, I don't need to get a hotel room. So we just had, our attendance was huge, but our room block was really disproportionately small because so many people commuted. So that's if you're not trying to start a convention, but you want to support a con, one of the biggest things you can do to support your local convention, even if you live close, is get a hotel room. Because the convention is financially responsible for making sure that we book enough rooms at the property. Talking about big events like conventions, it can be a struggle to make sure that you have enough spaces. The best thing you can do is write out a list of everything that you want to have. This goes for meets, too, because if you're looking for a bowling alley to do a bowling meet, but you want to have a headless lounge, for example, like a room where fursuiters can change in and out of their costumes, not all bowling alleys have party rooms. So the best thing you can do is take a piece of paper and write out what's everything that we want going on at this, and then what kind of room do we need for that. So it's like, all right, we want to do a bowling meet. Well, we want to have bowling, so that needs a bowling alley, period, easy, right? We need people, we want, okay, well, so our adult people aren't going to come to the bowling alley if they can't get alcohol, because furries love drinking. So now we need a bar. All right, cool, so we need a bowling alley with a bar. We want fursuiters to come, so we need a place for them to change. So we need a bowling alley with a bar and a party room. So, and then as you start, like, Googling these places, the list will fall less and less and less until eventually you only have a handful of options, and now you're in business. Now it's go around to all those options and ask how much money they want. Bowling alleys are going to be pretty easy because you're going to tell them, here's what we do, here's what we're about. You're going to have to explain what the hell furries are to them. Good luck with that. That's never a fun conversation, especially if you live somewhere where people aren't super understanding. Fortunately for me, Philadelphia and Valley Forge are pretty liberal areas, so people here are open to a lot of ideas. If you live kind of in the middle of nowhere, that may be a tougher sell. But at the end of the day, if you're giving a small business your money, they're probably not going to complain too much, even if they think you're weird. So making sure that the space you're looking for can accommodate you is huge. And then find out how much they want. And then once you know how much they want, it's just a matter of, can I afford this? And can I afford this is a pretty easy equation. It is, how many people do I expect are coming? How much am I charging them? Equals profit. So if I'm running a convention and I expect 1,000 people to come to my convention and my tickets are $50, looks like I have $50,000 to play with. Referencing the convention I was mentioning earlier that was nearby and failed and had the issues that shall not be named, in my conversations with the guy running that, he had incredibly unrealistic expectations as to how many people were going to show up at his event. I tried telling him that the most amount of people he could expect was 500. He told me he was expecting to see 2,000 or more. I told him he was smoking crack. At the end of the day, I think he had a little over 200 people come to his event. And so this person signed themselves up for a hotel contract that they were just really not prepared for. And when push came to shove and the hotel said, you need to pay us, his response was basically, I don't have money. And that didn't end super well for him. It sounds silly to say because it sounds obvious when I say it, but a lot of people jump into this kind of thing without considering that it does cost money. And that, you know, if it fails, you're going to be left holding the bag. I'm not saying that to scare you away from doing it, because someone told me this exact same thing. And I still did it, and it turned out all right. But at the end of the day, if your money falls short and your name is on a contract, they're looking at you to find out, hey, like, you know. So consider how much the contract is going to cost, and then consider how much money you have as a person or as a team. And one other thing I'll say is, no matter how good friends you have, if someone comes to you and they say, don't worry, if this doesn't work out, I'll have your back, financially speaking, when that extra $20,000 bill fell down from our first hotel, I had three people tell me, don't worry, if this convention goes sideways, we're going to help you pay for it. That came around. You know how many people came through?
Zero.
Not a single one of them. And I had to pay that bill with my money. That sucked. I've since been recuperating it from further conventions to repay that debt. But, you know, this can be sloppy business. Sometimes things don't work the way they're supposed to. A lot of times they do, though, and when it does, it's really great. And like I said, I'm not trying to scare anybody away from doing it, and more so just making sure you guys have unrealistic expectations about the start of this and what you're exposing yourself to, because there can be a good amount of financial liability here. So I would just, if you're dead set on doing something, all I'm saying is really look at the books, really do the math, make sure that that this is something that you're prepared to take on. And if the answer is yes, then you're good to go. Thanks, boss. So now that I've frightened you all with threats of financial loss, we can jump into talking about some more fun stuff. So are there any specific questions anyone here is looking to get answered? Like anything in particular? Or are we just here for general knowledge information?
Do you employ an accountant?
I have tried to employ several accountants. Every time I pay an accountant, they take my money and then disappear. This has happened 3 times. I'm not happy about it. That being said, I highly recommend having an accountant. I highly recommend that you pay your accountant. Try not to find an accountant who's super expensive. But our first 2 accountants, we got people to work pro bono. And if they're working pro bono, it means they don't have to follow through. So, but having someone on your team who understands how taxes work can really, really, really help, especially if you're incorporating as a company, and especially if that company is a nonprofit company. Having someone who understands how taxes work is really, really important. Real quick, before I'll get to your question in 1 second, before I jump off of this topic, for the record, Fairadelphia is a tax-exempt organization, not a tax-exempt organization. We were tax exempt, but then some of the paperwork actually lapsed during COVID because we didn't stay on top of it. So we're working on fixing that. So we are paying hotel tax. But we are still a nonprofit corporation. Nonprofit corporation basically has a number of meanings, and what it means for us is that none of us can accept bonuses or kickbacks as part of working this. None of us do, but technically we could be paid an hourly rate or a salary for doing this work. I don't want to get paid for doing it because that's not why I do it. And if you're doing this for money, I'm going to say that you're probably not in it for the right reasons.
And you're not going to get it anyway.
Yeah, and also I have made negative dollars from working for Fairadelphia. So if you're trying to make money, you're probably not in the right business. I highly recommend starting a furry clothing brand. Those seem to do really, really well. But in terms of what nonprofit means for us, it means that we can't accept bonuses, so it's not like at the end of the convention, based on how much money there's left over, it's not like we can divide that up and give that to the people who work the convention. That would be illegal. And in addition to that, what it also means is that we do not have to apply sales tax to our membership dues, in other words, your registrations. Essentially, the fact that we are a nonprofit agency, the way that the IRS looks at it is that us running this event and collecting your registrations as a company is, technically speaking, no different than if I, as a dude, were to go around and collect money from everybody to throw a party. right? So if we're, you know, if all of us are going out to dinner and I say, everyone give me $30 and we're going to the $30 all-you-can-eat place, the IRS isn't going to be like, well, everyone who gave you the $30, you need to charge sales tax. Because that's not how it works. Technically, we're just pooling our money to party together. That's how it's looked at that way. So if you're going to form a company, I recommend that it be a nonprofit. There's a lot of paperwork involved. We got ours set up through LegalZoom. It was kind of expensive, but very easy. So consider that. And if you have local, like, business lawyers and business accountants in your area, definitely talk to them. You might get someone who's a little bit cheaper than LegalZoom is. If you're running, like, a small meet, it's probably not necessary. But if you're trying to run something bigger, definitely a nonprofit can help. Anyway, I'm going to grab another question over here. Yeah.
When Furadelphia started, did you have someone on the team who had a lot of tax experience, and what did that experience look like?
The answer is no. I started as the accountant, which was really not great due to me not being a CPA and not knowing how tax worked. Taxes are not easy. So, hey, excuse me, my friend in the back, would you mind just kind of like pushing the door? Just, you don't have to close it, but just not all the way open, just because it's a little loud. Anyway, I started as the accountant. I was watching the money. That's perfect. Thank you. And when we started out, there it goes. When we started out, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I did not understand how it worked. I didn't understand what I was supposed to file and when, and I missed several payments, like several very important filings. Missed them, didn't do them just because I didn't know. Didn't know what they were, didn't know how I was supposed to do them. I have since gotten much better educated. I will say that despite everyone having fears of the IRS, they are actually very friendly and extremely helpful if you call them. Despite missing several very important filings, I made one call to the IRS and they were like, okay, let's get this taken care of. And it was very easy. If you find yourself in financial trouble with the IRS, if you call them, you will be shocked how quickly it can go away. They're pretty good. They're not trying to screw people over there, although sometimes it can seem like it. But if you just call them and you be like, hey, I think I messed up my taxes. Can you help me? Usually they're pretty eager to help set you straight. Unless you are actively trying to engage in criminal behavior, then that's different. But, you know, hopefully none of us are doing that.
Thank you.
I work with the IRS. I'm both in the IRS. Yeah, I know.
Okay, yeah. So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah, usually people at the IRS are pretty eager to just get you set straight, make sure that you don't underpay or overpay, and get everyone on the straight and narrow. But again, most of us here are talking about running smaller events than full-blown conventions. Starting a nonprofit, it costs us like $600. Just to get everything done, because you have to file with your state. If it's different from state to state, like how much it costs for a filing fee, you have to have a lawyer who is identified as your, I forget the term, but basically you have to have a lawyer on retainer. That's usually pretty cheap. It's a small annual fee as long as you don't actually need to use their service, but you have to have, it's an agent of record is what it's called. It basically just says like, hey, if I have a problem. So if you get your company incorporated through LegalZoom, LegalZoom can be your agent of record as well, which is what we had. We've never had to use them for anything, but it's required to have. But point is, if you're going to be accepting money from people and you don't want any kind of weird financial liability, I will personally admit that I've gone to some furballs where they've been like, hey, we want you to contribute to the organization. It's $20. And I said, cool, who am I paying? And I found out that I was paying some individual person. And I said, cool, I'm not giving you my money because I'm not just going to hand cash to like a guy, you know, because I don't know, because I mean, like, how much did this cost? Are you making a profit off of this? I don't personally want to give some person my money so that they can make money off the furry fandom. That's my personal stance. So it never hurts to have a company collecting it. And it's not super expensive to get started, as long as you just stay on top of your stuff.
Does having an official charity help you become a nonprofit?
You mean someone we partner with?
Yeah, having a charity as part of your convention.
So it doesn't help you get set up as a nonprofit, but basically, in addition to us helping a local charity, what our partnership with the charity does, and what the reason why a lot of other conventions do this, is that we can essentially structure ourselves in terms of the government as a fundraising gala. So essentially, like, for example, the American Heart Association puts on what they call a Heart Ball, which is a big fundraising event every single year. So people come to the Heart Ball, donate money at the Heart Ball to the American Heart Association. We can kind of, as a company, set ourselves up as, like, we are doing this to raise money for them, and it helps justify the nonprofit.
I guess in California they had some things in honor of Dog Bowl for ALS. They had some fundraisers out in California that way.
Yeah, it can help. It's definitely not necessary. If you explain that you're an event and no one at the event is making profit, then that's all you really need to be a nonprofit corporation. But at the end of the day, it does help. And also, it's just a nice thing to do for the community, to be part of the charity. In terms, real quick, of like finding a charity to partner with, that was something that we struggled with a good amount, because if you are trying to find a charity to pair with, figuring out a good charity can be tough. We went around to a couple different charities. We were originally going to do, there's a zoo local around here that is funded by donations. And we're like, that's cool. We could go see if we could donate them. And so we went there. and we found that, I'm telling the story about when we went to the zoo for the charity. Yeah, the Elmwood Park. Ew. We went there and we're like, maybe these guys could be our charity. And we walked in and the first thing that they had was a massive wall of all of their donors. And it was like, there were some big names up there, like huge corporate donors. I'm standing there looking at this wall. I'm like, we're probably going to pull together like a couple grand. Our little rinky-dink donation is going to mean nothing to these people. So we ultimately left. And what we found instead was a small charity that was a dog rescue being run by a handful of individuals, where we actually met them at one of their fundraiser events. And while we were there at one of their fundraisers, they managed to make $150 in a day. They were there for like 6 hours. They made $150. We're like, all right. To me, what was important is finding a charity where when we go hand them a check for $5,000, they're like, this is life-changing for us. This is a massive amount of money. That was important to me. Because if we went over to the zoo and they're like, here's $5,000, they're like, okay. You know, we'll feed it to the lions, I guess. So, yeah, I know that wasn't the question that you asked, but that's a good way of finding a charity. Just look up local small charities close to you. Yeah.
All right, kind of a cynical question.
Sure.
But I tried to do a thing years ago, and one person showed up.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a factor is your popularity in the fandom?
No one knows who the hell I am to this day, and we still have 1,500 people who come to this event.
Okay.
So, when I started FD, no one knows who I am. No one knew who I was at the time. I was just a guy who went to conventions. Don't have a fursuit. My Twitter had maybe 250 followers. It's really not about your popularity. It's about your friendliness and your networking. Mm-hmm. Because when we started Furrydelphia, one of the first things we did when we decided we want to run a convention was we went to other conventions, and the first place we went was the dealer's den for other cons, and we went to all the vendors, and we said, hey, we're thinking of running a convention located in Philadelphia. What do you think about that? And then a lot of vendors responded like, yeah, maybe, we'd have to see, but quite a few people were like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. And then once you get the vendors on board, like, that's that helps a lot, because they, if they're going to come to your convention to sell, then they want other people to come to your convention to buy. So they'll start helping you out, spreading the word and stuff like that. We made a Twitter. We just started tweeting stuff, just random things. We put out a poll that said how many people would be interested in coming to Furrydelphia, and we politely asked the social media lead for Anthrocon if they could retweet that for us, which they did. And so that poll ended up getting like 850 retweets. Responses, I meant to say. So that was pretty good publicity for us as well. You'd be surprised how getting other people to like carry you with their weight can be. But also don't be surprised if people don't really want to do that, especially considering the secret convention that just failed like a year ago, kind of near here, that we're not going to mention. People, especially nowadays, might be a little hesitant to associate themselves with brand new startup cons because we don't know who you are, what you're doing, or what your intentions are.
I don't want to do a convention.
But you understand what I mean. In terms of, do I need to be a Poppyfur in order to run an event? It definitely helps.
Also, if you're talking about the con, I think you're talking about, I'm kind of in that area, so
okay,
Earth maybe sold it already.
Yeah. In terms of, do you need to be a Poppyfur? It definitely helps if you're someone with a lot of connections who likes hanging out with you. That is someone I've noticed. But I wasn't that. And it still worked out all right for me. So I think it's just about knowing how to market, knowing who to talk to, and knowing how to get your brand out there. I will say, if you just kind of like, you know, make a event or make like a little listing, like a posting on a forum. The first time I ever tried doing a kind of event, I just made a single little forum post on like the PA furry forums. This was like 10 years ago. I got one person who responded to me. So, you know, if you don't market, then you're not going to get responses. You have to put yourself in front of people. Sometimes figuring out how to do that can be difficult. But if you know anyone who has decent Twitter followings, it helps. And by decent, I mean like more than you. And anybody.
That's not hard for me.
Anyway.
I went to your D&D thing.
You were the one.
Yeah.
That was how we met. Now we run a con. But no, at the time I had like 200 followers, so I found someone who has like 1,000 followers, and I was like, can you help me put the word out about this? And they're like, oh, I don't have very many followers. I'm like, you have more than I do. But, you know, you can go to the guy who has a little more followers than you, who can go to the guy who has a little bit more followers than you and push it up. It's just about figuring out how to spread, you know. It can be tough. It can be really tough, I'm not going to lie. But just, we did it by talking to anybody who would listen to us. And then once we had enough of a following, we scraped together some cash from our jobs to get stickers made. We made artwork. It looked like crap, but it was very colorful. And we just made stickers and started putting stickers out, and that got us some attention as well. Anything you can get that like brings people to your social media pages. I would say that social media in this day and age is almost mandatory. I don't think you're running a convention without a Twitter or a meet or whatever, you know. Certainly not like an organization. But do you need to be a Poppyfur? Definitely not. But it helps.
So what's the planning for the planning process like for something like this, and how far in advance do you usually have to start?
For this convention? For a convention like this?
Yeah.
So we started planning for this particular convention about 10 weeks ago, because that was when the Department of Health told us we were good to go. It was a sloppy mess, and I don't recommend doing it. Typically, we get the ball rolling. So our convention's in August. We typically get the ball rolling around October. So it's pretty much like, do August, take September off, October get going. And it's registration, room block to the best of our ability. A lot of times those things don't open until later. The biggest thing is just making sure that you know what you have to do and that you know how long they're going to take and that you allow yourself enough time. Because if you start planning for a convention, like in a hotel, I will say you need to get your hotel contract together probably a year in advance, if not more. The further out you can get on the books, the better. If you decide you want to do an event in August like this and you don't start looking until April, you're going to have a lot of difficulty finding properties, especially for a convention like this, because y'all see how many rooms this hotel has. If one other organization books one of these rooms for any one of the days of the convention, the whole hotel is no longer viable. You know? Because, like, if we had one year we found a hotel, they were a perfect hotel, but we had to push the convention back by 2 weeks because our target week that we had in mind, there was a CPR instruction class happening in one of the panel rooms. We only had two panel rooms at the last hotel, and we were unwilling to go down to one panel room, and especially unwilling to have a freaking CPR class going on in the middle of our convention. So, but literally because one client booked one room at the property, the whole weekend was no longer viable. So we had to go out. So the sooner you start looking for your event, the better. That being said, you will have to pay a deposit. And how much they want for a deposit is going to be negotiable. Some places are going to want $1,000. Some places are going to want $10,000. Some places are going to want all of it in advance. Our last hotel wanted all of it in advance. That was a fun argument to have. But yeah, start planning. The more time you give yourself, the better it's going to be. Especially for things that you don't think that you have to do until the very last minute, such as designing a con book, getting a registration system working. Because you could be like, oh yeah, we'll just open registration on this date. And you're like, cool, but what does that mean? How do you open a registration system? Philadelphia uses a system called RegFox. If you're trying to run a convention, I highly recommend looking it up. I believe it was started by furries, but I don't have guarantee. But it's called RegFox, so probably. But yeah, just the more planning you give yourself. If it's a first-year con, I would not try to run it in any less than a year. We started planning this in January of 2016, and our first con was August 2017. January was when we made our social media. First con was like 20 months later. So,
do you do your own site selection, or do you use something like Helms Briscoe?
We started off doing our own site selection. We picked up Helms Briscoe about halfway through.
Okay.
When our previous hotel started jerking us around. I highly recommend it. If you've been given a card for Teresa Dodson, then you should definitely talk to her. If you know the name Helms Briscoe, then you probably know the name Teresa Dodson. She is the Helms Briscoe person for all furries everywhere.
I may have heard that name once or twice.
Yeah, she is our contact. We got contact from her from Furthermore. Furthermore got her from TFF.
Furthermore.
If Furthermore recommended you Helms Briscoe, then they're recommending Teresa Dodson. She does.
Sort of, because I believe somebody at Furthermore is trying to switch over to Procurigens for personal reason.
Huh, okay.
I don't know the full story, but
I don't know that anything about that either.
I don't know.
But if you're going with so definitely Helms Briscoe, Teresa's her name, she's great. But they can just help you because they have connections through all these hotel networks that they can just make sure that if your hotel tries to jerk you around, you have a little bit of muscle behind your back.
Yeah.
Another thing I'll say real quick that you should totally look into is event insurance. Event insurance is very cheap. It's usually like, it is a 3-digit number, not a 4-digit number, which is a big deal. for this convention, for 6 days of insurance coverage, it cost like $250. And we have $3 million of accident insurance. I highly, highly recommend that because I know a lot of events that run without event insurance. And, you know, if someone hurts themselves while they're on your site and they decide to sue you, what are you going to do about that? That's the question, you know? So definitely consider event insurance. It can help out a lot.
In some of that, one of the things that I noticed is that you do have EMS and nurses and stuff on staff. Are you doing any special licensing through the state for that?
We are completely volunteer, and because of that, we are operating under what's called Good Samaritan Law.
Okay.
Good Samaritan Law means that as long as you are acting in good faith, no one can sue you for attempting to help in a medical emergency. It helps that everyone who works on our medical team is a licensed EMT, paramedic, or registered nurse with certifications for either Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, or New York. Those are our stipulations.
Okay.
Because our stipulations are, if you're going to work EMS at Philadelphia, you have to understand local health codes, basically. But Good Samaritan Law means that, you know, if you find someone unconscious on the ground and you decide to do CPR on them and you don't do a particularly good job of CPR, no one can try to sue you because you tried helping, you know? Or if you believe it or not, I don't know if you've ever seen CPR, not movie CPR, but real life CPR, that is ugly. Real CPR is friggin' ugly.
I've done it.
Yeah, so you know that you will break every rib in that person's chest.
Yep.
And so if they survive the CPR, it is actually pretty common that they will try to sue the person who did CPR on them because, ow, you broke my ribs. Good Samaritan Law says, hey, they saved your life. You can't sue them.
Okay.
So that being said, I highly recommend that you don't let just anybody work your medical team, because Good Samaritan Law doesn't come into effect if people are being, like, knowingly negligent. And
right.
That can potentially fall back on you. So I'd be very picky about who... I would rather have no medical team than a bad medical team.
Right.
I would rather have 911 be my medical team. And if someone gets hurt, just call an ambulance. Then have someone show up who, like, is an asshole and just makes the situation worse.
Okay.
The same goes for public safety. You really have to watch people who are working security for you, any size event. If you have, I've seen like furballs and stuff where they have one or two guys working security, all the way up to conventions like this one where we have like upwards of 30 or 40 people working security through the entire property. Security is our biggest department by far. We have the most bodies because of what's called access control. So you'll note that we have all of our guys who are checking to make sure that you have your badges and your masks on as you come in and out. That is extremely important to us. It is really easy to put the wrong people unknowingly on your security department and then have them be huge, raging, egotistical assholes. And that can break a convention. I will not say what convention it was, but I went to a convention a few years ago. Now, I have an injury where I walk kind of funny. And so I was walking through the hotel, kind of hobbling a little bit like I do. And one of the members of public safety looked at me. I don't think there are any minors in the room, right? Is anyone a minor? One of the members of their security team looked at me as I was walking through the hotel. It was about 12 o'clock at night. Looked at me and said, "Whoa, bro, how fucked up are you?" Because he thought I was drunk. Because he thought I was slipping drunk. I looked him right in the eyes and I was like, "Actually, bro, I have a disability." And he was like, okay. And then just left. I didn't say anything to the convention. But, like, If you're a member of security and you think someone's drunk, your response is to go, whoa, how fucked up are you? Like, that's not super professional. Maybe you should be like, hey, are you all right? How's that? That sounds like a better question to me.
Need help getting to your room?
Yeah. I wasn't at this convention, but I heard of another convention where there was one member of security staff who didn't like how an attendee talked to him, and his response was to shut down the entire dance. He went up into the AV booth, he said, I am security, I'm shutting this down, and shut it all down. And the dance was quiet for like 20 minutes until the director of security came over and said, what the hell are you doing? And then they booted him off property. So, you know, background check your people who are helping for you. That goes for all staff. But just background check your people. Not literally background check, because that costs money. But just, you know, make sure you know who you're dealing with. And if someone's being a problem on your staff, don't hesitate to get rid of them. We've got... Furrydelphia has ejected staff members in the middle of the convention for failing to provide service that is on par with our expectations. Don't be afraid to do that, you know? So, yeah, make sure you trust the people you're working with. It's 4:50. Man, time flies. We got 10 minutes left. Are there any other specific questions? I want to make sure I'm answering the stuff that you guys want to know before I just ramble. Yeah, with the cool firsty.
So again, back to accounting, you said that you had to do a lot of learning on your own about that. I'm in a position where I'm likely to have to do a lot of learning about that sort of thing myself. Do you have any recommendations or suggestions for resources or things that you used to learn what you needed?
It's really tough. My resource for learning how to do accounting for this type of business was literally failure. Like, failure to do so. Like, not getting the right stuff in and then getting a letter from the IRS that's like, hey, you haven't filled out these things. We're going to pull your business license unless you fill them out. And I was like, oh, shit. So I called them up real quick, and they're like, okay, here's what you have to do. And I did it. And we haven't gotten anything like that since, other than the nonprofit, because the tax exemption. Because we got the tax exemption, same thing happened. If you are a tax exempt organization, you have to file a lot of specific paperwork throughout the year, and if you fail to do that, they'll pull your tax exemption like that. You don't need to be tax exempt, but it certainly helps, especially if you're running a convention like this, where, you know, if you're paying 6% tax on a $50,000 hotel contract, that's a good amount of money. That's thousands of dollars that you could potentially save by just not having to pay tax. So, again, we unfortunately, and I'm not ashamed to say it, I screwed that up, and we lost our tax-exempt status, working on getting it back. If you lose your tax-exempt status, like they pull it, it is hard to get them to give it to you again. So we're working on that actively. But, you know, like I said, I've not done a perfect job of running this. I still try to figure out stuff a lot. The best thing that I can say for how to learn is there's a plethora of information online. Probably, honest to God, probably the best thing you can do is call the IRS, call your local Department of Revenue. By local, I mean your state. I don't know if you live in Pennsylvania or somewhere else. But for me, a phone call to the PA Department of Revenue and say, hi, I apologize, but I'm stupid. What do I have to do? That can go a long way, you know? Just asking them, like, what's the schedule? What do I have to do? Pennsylvania has a portal for it. It's called eTides. It was very, very difficult to learn because it was coded by boomers and has a horrible interface.
I think Maine.
No offense.
Yeah.
But it has a really, really horrible interface, and it's very difficult to navigate. And so I'd call them and be like, I have no idea how this system works, and they walked me through it, and then it became easier.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
This is mostly just curiosity.
Uh-huh.
I remember a panel like a couple years ago, the same panel, you said, like, ideally, a guest of honor, especially early on, should, like, live in the state or driving range. If you had a guest, this is just mostly curiosity. If you had a guest of honor that you had to fly, had to fly in, do you flip the plane ticket?
Yes.
Or? Okay. I thought
otherwise, your guest of honor will tell you to go to hell. Yep.
All right.
So we have never flown a guest of honor to the hotel. We have only had one guest of honor come to the property who came on a plane, and we just shot from the hip, and we were like, we bumped into her at another convention. At Amplicon. We bumped into her at Amplicon. She's from like California or whatever. But we bumped into her at AC, and I'm like, hey, for, you know, just out of curiosity, Archon's not too much further. Would you be interested in this? But I disclosed right from the beginning. I'm like, all right, here's our guest of honor package. We pay for your hotel room, and we'll pick you up from the airport and drop you back off. But we're not buying your plane ticket because we're a nonprofit. We don't have a lot of money, and we can't afford it. And then they can say no, or they can say yes. In this case, she said yes. We had a lot of people where we offered them. We had one guy where we asked if he could come be our guest of honor, and he told us that his appearance fee was $10,000. And we said no. We're like, thank you. But we were supposed to have Jonah Scott out this year. He unfortunately couldn't make it, but he said, you know, he had an appearance fee, and he wanted us to get him a plane ticket, and we decided it was worth it, so we tried pulling the trigger on that. Didn't work out because of COVID, but he'll be here next year. But yeah, if we're pulling guests of honor, like in terms of pulling someone as a guest of honor, they are going to expect that their stay at your convention is not going to cost them money. So yeah, you should definitely be prepared to pick up that bill. That's why I say go with someone local. Anything else anyone's like super curious about? Yeah.
How do you go about like picking up destinations or picking destinations and like pricing and stuff like that? Like
Yeah. I know you came in a little bit after. We talked about that a good amount for pretty much the first half hour. But just to recap that a little bit, it's really important that you understand how many rooms you need for your event. If you're trying to run a big convention, then you need to have a dealer's den, a main event, registration, all that stuff. All that needs rooms. If you're trying to run a smaller meet, like a bowling alley or whatever, you need to figure out, do I want a headless lounge at the meet so customers can change? Do I want there to be a bar or restaurants that people can get food and alcohol if they come? So just understanding before you start looking what's important to you. Like track, because you're an attendee at a convention, so walk around the convention, take note of what spaces are present and what you need. We have 4 panel rooms. If you're starting off as a convention, you probably don't need 4 panel rooms. Philadelphia year 1 had 2 panel rooms. That was more than sufficient. It was two panel rooms and main events, Philadelphia year 1. Now we've got 4 panel rooms, secondary events and main events. So next year I think we have to walk it back a little bit. We're changing the layout a little bit because 4 panel rooms is too much. We had a lot of blank space on the schedule this year, so we're going to use one of the rooms for something different. But you know what I mean? It's just understand how much. And then in terms of figuring out your price, I said this before, I'll say it again, it's pretty easy math. How many people do I expect to come? How much money am I going to charge them? This times that equals the amount of money you expect to make.
Gotcha.
And then just understand, like I said before, if you sign that name on your contract and things go south and you don't get as much money, that venue is coming to you looking for the bill. And that bill, depending on where you go, might be a lot. So just make sure that you understand that that's the responsibility that you're accepting. And if you're comfortable with it, then carry on. Gotcha. If you have any doubts in your mind whatsoever, I don't know if this is a good idea, you should pump the brakes and think about it. Make sure that you're good with it.
Cool, thank you.
And, I have now helped you to the best of my ability. If you guys have any specific things you want to ask me in particular, I have a little bit of time, so feel free to... I will be sitting right there. Otherwise, thanks for showing up. Please enjoy the rest of the
All right.
Oh, yeah. In regards to us implementing mask mandate literally the day before the convention, don't be afraid to make tough calls if it's the right choice. Okay?
No.
You know what the right choice? It was the right thing to do. None of us were happy about it. You think I want to be wearing this thing on my face right now? Hell no. I got vaccinated.
Yeah.
But it's for the greater good.
The greater good.
Exactly.
So I actually do have kind of a question about that. What was the final deciding factor to pull the trigger on the mandate?
It was two things. It was people going to Florida for Megaplex and then coming straight here after. And it was Philadelphia reinstituting the mask mandate, which started on Thursday. We are obviously not in Philadelphia, but it's close enough and impacts us enough that we had a lot of attendees emailing us very concerned, like, and so we just said, we're just going to put it on. Basically, the math is like, we're going to piss off somebody. So what do we want the Twitter conversation to be? Do we want it to be, I'm mad at Furrydelphia because they're making me wear a mask and I don't want to? Or is it, I'm mad at Furrydelphia because they're not protecting our public health and they're endangering us? Pretty easy choice once you look at it, you know? Like, what do you want the Twitter discourse to be? What's easier to defend? We're like, well, it's easier to defend us going above and beyond. So, there you go. Let's use that.
Right, otherwise, Japan wouldn't exist.